Hello and welcome to the Music Retailers Podcast. I'm your host, Donovan Bankhead, and together you and I are going to listen to and learn from some of my favorite instrumental music retailers, manufacturers, well, anyone else that I think would be interesting. My goal is to provide a podcast where you can learn something new in every episode.
This conversation today took place right after I bought Springfield Music from Lee. So this would have been probably October of 2020. And I really just recorded it just kind of for my own benefit, kind of for posterity of some of the history of Springfield Music. Recorded it just using my phone. So I didn't ever really intend on making a podcast episode out of it, but it's just too much fun. And I think throughout the recording, you can hear just the love, respect, appreciation we have for one another, and it's kind of fun. So this is a bit of kind of a vanity project of an oral history of Springfield Music, but I think there's a lot of lessons to learn also about taking chances, betting on yourself, trusting others, and I think it's a fun listen.
Bill's started it in 61.
In his basement.
In his basement?
Yeah, and he just basically...
Where did he live?
I don't know. I do not know.
Just somewhere here in town.
He was a teacher, and I think he taught at Jarrett.
And band director? Mm-hmm. Teacher? Okay.
Yeah. But he started it because he wanted to get out of teaching, and he hired a road guy, and it was Ron, which was his son-in-law by a previous marriage. So anyway, and then he had a location over in the Glen Isle, not Glen Isle, it's where the dollar store is now, on the right-hand side, where Dandy Leather is and all that.
Yeah.
Off of Bennett.
Yeah.
It was in that
shopping center where the leather store now takes almost half that shopping center.
Yeah.
They've expanded, but it was in that little, same one, yeah. When was it in the Glen Isle, do you remember?
Well, he switched to, not Glen Isle, he went to the Plaza.
Right.
But in that little shopping center, that's Country Club Plaza.
Country Club, that's right. Yeah.
And he was there probably in the late 60s.
Okay.
68. And that's when he hired Dwayne. So Dwayne worked there.
Yeah.
And then he moved over to the Plaza, but he shared space with a shoe repair shop. And so you come in and walk through the shoe repair shop, and then his place was behind that.
Wow.
But he had road guys, so most of his business was just band.
Right.
And
it wasn't retail and stuff.
And it might have been just the opposite. He might have been in the Plaza and then moved to Country Club, because Country Club, he had a retail store. And Dwayne talked him in. I think it was Dwayne that talked him into carrying guitars.
Gotcha.
And because he hated him. He wouldn't do it. And Dwayne finally convinced him. Because Dwayne was played on the road for a couple guys that I knew.
Mm-hmm.
And bass, played bass. And, he and I were in second grade together.
Yeah.
And I went to his 10th birthday party.
Oh, my God.
And the day that I bought the store, I recognized him. And I went home and I found this picture that I have of me at his 10th birthday party.
That's crazy.
And I showed it to him. I said, "Do you remember that?" He said, "Yeah, I do." I said, "That's me right there."
That's crazy. Did he know that when you were there before
after
you showed,
I showed
the picture?
It to him.
It came back then.
Yeah, but it came back like instantly.
So yeah.
I'm like, "I remember you."
But that was in Tulsa, though.
No, that was in Springfield. I lived here in Springfield in second, in third, and fourth grade.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so I knew Dwayne in at his 10th birthday parties, who were probably in third grade, maybe.
Gotcha. Okay.
And, but at any rate, yeah, so Dwayne and I had this connection. But he convinced Bill to carry guitars, and Alvarez was his first line.
Mm.
And he did a lot with St. Louis Music. And then they moved finally out to the one where I bought it. So he only owned it. He started it, and he sold it to me in 1986. So I don't know how many years that is.
Well, 61, 20, 25 years.
Yeah, he had it. So he had it a while.
Yeah, that's a chunk.
And
so started in his home, then probably went to the Plaza where he shared it with the shoe store, then moved over to Country Club where he had his own thing. And then after Country Club, where did it go?
Out to Glenstone and Battlefield.
Right.
At the very end of that shopping center where Big Biscuit is now.
Yeah. Yeah, so, which looked totally different way back then.
Oh, yeah, back then.
Yeah.
It's been renovated twice,
I think, since, yeah. since then.
And the interesting thing was that he bought it, and then he decided at the time that he bought it, about a year later approximately, to get off the road. So he got rid of all his road people. He only had one or two, but he just felt like it was just a waste of money.
Hmm.
And started renting out of the store. And so he capped off at about 300-350 instruments
mm-hmm.
a year. But you rented them all in the store.
Right.
And he kept getting them back as a get-it-back contract. Very few people bought.
Yeah.
So he was always like, yeah, come on, bring it back. You know, and then he'd rent them out the next year. It's kind of like recurring income.
Yeah.
I guess.
Well, when you're not, like, calling on schools.
You know, a lot of expense.
Yeah. You can just
and Dwayne
do that.
Prepared them.
Yeah.
You know.
Who cares if they start looking ugly or whatever?
Oh, yeah,
like, they play just fine. And yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can kind of get away with that then.
And then I came along, and because I don't know what he did out there. I shopped there a couple of times because I lived here, but I was looking for music, sheet music.
Mm-hmm.
I never bought anything there except that. But anyway, yeah, I came along, and a friend of mine, he's a broker, Chad Simmons, who now lives in Kansas City. He called me one day because we had just sold Earth Wonder, because we bought Earth Wonder in 1980 and we owned it until like 1986 and sold it to some people. And so I was basically unemployed and had about $25,000. And Chad called me and said, hey, you want a music store? Because he was a business broker.
Yeah.
It was his job, you know?
Right, yeah.
And I said, well, I don't know. He said, well, you're kind of a musician, are you? And I said, well, was for a while, but, you know, things change.
Yeah.
And, but anyway, I went and visited with Bill, and he was like, yeah, I'm ready. You know, let's do a deal. And so, it's about 2 weeks, we got it done.
Do you remember what you paid for it?
$72,000.
Holy cow. This was like Funky Monkey.
Yeah.
We
yeah.
paid not much more than that.
Yeah, there wasn't anything there.
Yeah.
All right. Same thing. I had 300 band instruments, and about 150 of them were on rent. And I had a really nice Martin Shenandoah guitar that they had bought.
Yeah.
And they had some guitars, but I bet they had six, maybe.
Wasn't Bill's advice to you was to never really get into the guitar business, to kind of stay away from that?
No.
I thought he said something along those lines.
I think
lines,
he told me, he said, never go on the road. That was a big okay. bet. He hated that.
Right.
He felt like that was the worst thing in the world. And, you know, he and I got along well, but he was a heavy smoker. And he would just sit in my office and just smoke cigarettes until I was ready to die.
Right.
And finally one day I just asked him, I said, can you stop smoking around me? And kind of pissed him off, and he kind of didn't show up. After that, so, which was okay. I was ready to see him go. But yeah, and then Nancy took over all the books. And when we bought it, he had a bookkeeper, and I cannot remember her name, but he fired her the day before we took it over.
Mm.
And she came in the store and she was really upset and, you know, just, you know, with her family.
Oh,
know,
my gosh.
Like, I'm like, I didn't know anything about this.
Yeah.
And I kind of did. I kind of sensed that he was going to do it, but I didn't. It wasn't my position to say anything.
Right.
And so she was pretty upset. So that was a very upsetting day because she didn't want to leave. And but Nancy took over her job.
Well, that kind of puts Nancy in a bit of a spot too, because now, like, if you wouldn't have fired her, you could at least had her there for a little bit to figure out what's going on. And but now it's like, well, she's gone. Let's just dig into it.
Yeah. Well, basically, it was a box with dates and pieces.
Pretty simple.
Paper
of what you owe, when, and
phone numbers and the number of payments. You had to write down payments every time you made.
It's probably a lot simpler then than it would be today.
Very simple. it was stupid simple. And they had a lot of collections, too. So that was the other thing. Nancy took over collections, and we got a lot of stuff back. And we hired some collection people. You know how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we made it. You know, it wasn't a bad problem to have.
So it was 86. And you, it's both you and Nancy working in it. You were kind of on the floor, probably doing a lot of the ordering and stuff too.
Yeah.
In that time, and then when did you start bringing in like the big guitar? Like, when were you able to get Taylor and Fender and?
That's a good bigger, question.
Well, actually, tell the story how you like really got into the guitar business.
Oh, Monty.
From Monty.
Yeah.
That's
Monty
such a great story.
Yeah, Monty came up one day and he said, I want to put you in the guitar business. And I knew Roger. I didn't know Monty all that well. And Monty was kind of a, you know, mover and a shaker, thought he was. And
right.
Probably true to some extent. And I told him, I said, you know, and he called and he said, yeah, that's what he told me. I said, yeah, I'm not interested. And pissed him off, and so he drove up. Then he came in and he said, nobody tells me that they don't want to talk to me. And I'm like, all right, so talk. But he convinced me, and he said, and basically the deal was, I'll bring you all the guitars you want. They're in all varying conditions. We repair some of them. Some of them are good, some of them are bad, but it doesn't make any difference. We price them accordingly. And you make 40%, I make 60%, and we do it on consignment, and you pay me monthly. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, how do you say no to that? Yeah.
Yeah, no cash, and I didn't have any anyway. And he brought in the second day like 100 guitars, and we just put them on stands everywhere. And
up until that point, how many guitars would normally be in the store?
Probably 12, 15, somewhere in there. So, like, overnight, we're in the guitar business. And, I mean, it was a cash flow hound.
Oh, yeah.
It was great. And, you know, Monty would show up on about the second, and we'd, you know, do inventory, and I'd write him a big check, and he went home, and I was happy. And
yeah.
That went on for probably a couple of years. And then the Rock Shop was still around, and so they carried a lot of guitars. And so their Christmas promotion was, buy a guitar from the Rock Shop, a guitar you want to play, not throw away. Which, obviously.
Well, then Monty obviously ended up moving away and starting MIRC.
Right.
And, like, is now doing this on a much bigger scale. I don't think he's doing the consignment thing anymore.
And I was sort of his test case, I guess.
Yeah.
He didn't have any accounts other than me at that time.
Wow.
And but they had a little shop down in Branson, and Roger ran it, and Monty just, you know, had all this stuff. I mean, it was just truckloads of stuff coming in.
That's crazy.
And but yeah, so that's how I got in the guitar business. And then after that, and this is some stuff I really don't remember. Actually, what happened was we moved through that period of time, and then in 1997, because that would have been 9 years, so. And that probably happened in 1990 when he showed up.
Okay, so Monty showed up around 1990.
Yeah.
With all the consignment guitars. Okay.
And so we hung with that. And maybe it had been longer. It could have been 5 years for all of them. But, you know, we started bringing in other... We got Squire. We never could get Fender. And that was with... what's his name? Who was the Fender rep?
Was it Jim King? Was he the rep?
Jim King was the second one. It was the first one.
Yeah. Was it Larry?
Barnes.
Larry Barnes, yeah.
And Barnes...
Because then we had Larry again after Jim King retired. Yeah.
Yeah. And Larry and I got along great, except Larry just would not give me Fender.
Yeah.
You know, he said, I'm not going to give you Fender. I've already got dealers. I'm like, you got another one.
Right.
Come on, you know, and finally... And, you know, I'd yell at him and, you know, I'd cuss him out and, you know, never got it. But I got Squire, and Squire did really well for us.
So you picked up Squire in the mid-90s then?
Yeah, probably.
Somewhere right around
somewhere
there.
Somewhere in there.
Did Fender come once you moved the store?
Yeah, once I moved it.
So how that how
this came after I moved the store?
Yeah, how did that come about? How did it come about to like build the shopping center, move the store?
Oh,
like what was
well,
it? Because that was like a big turning point.
Yeah,
I mean,
we
buying the business was a big turning point. Probably Monty, you know, bringing in 100 guitars
yeah,
probably a big
deal.
Turning point.
Yeah,
and then building the shopping center was another big turning point.
That was. We sold Earth Wonder. We bought Earth Wonder back. We sold it in 1986. We bought it back 6 years later, 1990.
Okay. 1990.
And so Nancy went to work over there. And so I can't remember who we hired to replace her. But anyway, my point is that
right. She
went over, and then I went over there too. So I would work at the store until about 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Then I'd go over to Earth Wonder and I'd work over there until like 10 o'clock at night. And then... Every day, that was what
right,
I did.
Right,
had zero life, and but Earth Wonder did really well. And then, so in 1995, 1996, somewhere we owned it 6 years. 1996. You remember Aikens?
Oh, yeah.
In Tulsa.
Yeah.
Well, they came. Eric, can't remember Eric's last name. Anyway, his father owned it, and then he ran it. And he came up to see me one day and said, I want to buy your store. And I went, okay, what do you want to pay for it? You know, we just got right down to it. And we bought that store for $90,000, and we sold it for like $480,000.
Oh, nice.
And it was mostly paid for. Wow. Cash flow like a mother.
Nice.
And so that provided, after taxes, all the cash to... And that's when I went searching for property, because I thought, well, I'm going to build a building.
Mm-hmm.
And my original building was going to be where Applebee's is today.
Oh, really?
Over on Flintstone. Stunning.
And yeah. It
was freaking $6 a foot. And I thought it was too expensive.
Oh, that's my gosh.
That's how not forward-thinking
it was. Right.
And Target wasn't there yet.
Yeah.
Nothing was there. It was just a little one-acre plot right next to... on Primrose and Glenstone. Glenstone was great. Primrose was nothing. You know?
Was the I forgot what the shopping center is now, or Best Buy. That was all there, though, wasn't it?
There.
Oh, that wasn't there yet either? Yeah. That must have got built shortly after that.
Yes. Yeah, thanks for having
me. Yeah.
And he told me all that, but I'm like, yeah, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Shoot. Missed one.
I did. I missed that. Like, and but, you know, I was thinking a 10,000 square foot building and an acre, you can do that.
Yeah.
And I was going to have an upstairs and... But at $6 a foot, and I can't remember what that was, $200,000+ an acre, whatever that is, $270,000, mm-hmm. I should have bought it. And
we probably wouldn't be there today, because the land's just worth too much to have a music store on it.
Well, I don't know, you know.
But it would have been a great investment.
Yeah. But at any rate, I was looking around, and somehow I met, Bob Wills, a neighbor of mine, who's an appraiser, introduced me to Larry. And Larry
Barnes, yeah.
And Larry had a architecture firm over in Elfindale. And so I went over there one day, and we started talking. Larry and I hit it off immediately, and he showed me what he was planning, and he had plans to build individual... Let me explain Larry first. Larry never spends his own money on anything. And so he had all these plans for all these buildings, and he was selling the concept, and so he wanted everybody to buy plots.
Yeah.
And use him to design the buildings, and that was his whole, which made sense, because
yeah.
That's what he did.
Yeah.
And so he had all these individual buildings, and mine was, the one I was talking about, was perpendicular to the street, facing north, and I thought, I don't want to do that. I said, I want to be out on the street.
Mm-hmm.
But that was all drive-in, so everything was this way. It's kind of U-shaped.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him that if he'd get all that up, and let's just build a nice strip center across here, you know, how big a strip center can you build? And we'll own it in common, we'll lease it, and let's do that. And so we did it.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah.
So
that's how Fremont Avenue Village came to be.
Yeah.
Just from that.
And that's all Larry's concept.
Condoed the offices that were behind it too, because you guys had that whole space. It wasn't just the strip center. You ended up doing even the offices back behind it. And those sold right away.
For the most part.
You kind of did that. You did that from the beginning, basically. You weren't necessarily leasing those.
No.
But then the strip center, Fremont Avenue Village itself, that was
a shopping
rented
center.
Out for years. I mean, it was the last year or two that you started condoing that out.
The last 2 years.
Yeah.
Started a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and it was never not full.
Yeah.
We never had we had some vacancies, but not for long.
Yeah.
And so it was always a good deal. But we always had the idea, because we condoed it the first day, you know, that was one of the first things we did. So we always had the ability to sell individual spaces if we wanted to.
Right.
We never did. Until we hit 70 and we're like, huh.
Maybe it's time to do this.
And everybody wanted them. That, I mean, everybody that was occupying had been there since day one.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, we want it.
Yeah. We don't want to move.
It's all yours.
Pain in the ass to move. So that had to be, though, like, what were you thinking? You had to have a little bit of trepidation about going from, like, you'd always kind of rented these smaller, pretty plain spaces before, and then you build Springfield Music. And I remember the first time I walked into Springfield Music, like, I was just blown away by how beautiful it was back then. And you put a lot of money into that store.
A lot.
Yeah, more than you had ever been put into any of the other iterations of the store.
204,000. Yeah, was the bottom line.
Which in the late 90s was a lot of money for infill. Yeah. Did you feel really confident that was going to pay off? Were you nervous about it? Tell me what you were thinking.
I just happened to have the money, and the bank was, you know, they were all good. Sid Blackburn, her husband runs Legacy Bank. Sid was our loan officer. And I had all these, you know, on the shopping center, I had all these plans, and I had all this spreadsheets and God knows, you know, and I said, we'll have at least. And she's like, I believe you. And I said, so in that case, can I get 200 and whatever thousand? And she said, yeah, we'll do that. And so she financed it all, and you know, it was worthwhile.
Yeah.
Most of the money went to down payment, because that wasn't a small number. So I had money for a while. But I invested it.
He reinvested it, yeah.
Yeah.
So you got Chris Miller from Pacific Store Designs involved.
What a...
And...
He was great on the design.
Yeah.
But he was awful on the colors. I mean, it looked like a three-ring circus. And and I didn't know what to do with it. And I showed it to Larry one day. And he went, good God. You know, he just said, leave it with me for a while.
Right.
And he came up with, you know, the basic design, the basic color scheme.
So Chris kind of came up with like the physical stuff. Let's do the accordion walls. Let's do these angles. Let's do the visual interest.
Right.
But he had a color scheme that was a little.
Yeah, it was like 18 different colors.
Wow.
And like the browsers that were being built had like green, blue stripes.
Yeah.
You know, and that would have played okay for about a month.
Yeah.
I think.
And it was like too trendy.
Yeah, way too trendy.
Yeah.
And Larry's just like, you really. And so I said, fine, you know, have at it.
Yeah.
And Chris, too, when he came here, because he came here to look at the building.
He didn't like the location.
He hated the location.
Yeah.
And he said, you're going to fail. And I said, no, I don't think so. He said, no, you're going to fail. You need to stop this whole deal. And I'm like, I'm too far in.
Right, yeah.
I can't do that. And so I just drove to the airport and said goodbye. And
that.
And we really hardly ever spoke since then.
Yeah,
but I'm glad, you know, that he did it.
I think he did a good job. I mean, there was, you know,
Larry could have done something as well or better.
Yeah,
I think. But I was, you know, I went to NAMM, to the NAMM show, and listened to his whole spiel, because he did what you guys used to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then I
saw him a few years ago. He was doing a presentation at NAMM.
Really?
And one of his before and after slides was Springfield Music.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah. I was sitting there. I had no idea that was coming up, because this would have been maybe 6 or 7 years ago. So, like, Springfield Music had been around for a while.
Was it a before and after, like?
Yeah, it was the old Springfield Music sign, the one that I have a picture of.
Yeah.
And then it was a new front not the one that's up there right now.
So
obviously.
It wasn't as bad as I thought.
Yeah, clearly. And then he had some stuff at the inside. And I had no idea we were going to be on there, but I was in the audience. And when, you know, our picture comes up, I kind of do one of those. Like, wait a minute, that's our store.
I had
like,
no idea that happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you talk to him?
I did. I went up after and told him who I was.
Terrible location?
No, he just talked about what a great store it was. He really didn't say anything.
Yeah, but it survived.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
Well, he's probably smart enough to not. Oh, that's your store? Yeah, I thought it was terrible.
Terrible. I just wanted to use it for an example. And moving was really interesting. We basically got two trucks and flatbed trailers.
Mm-hmm.
And we took all the guitars out, and we had blankets. And so we laid blankets on the bottom, put guitars flat, blankets over them, guitars flat. We had like three or four maybe stacks.
Wow.
And it was... 12x15 trailer or something like that. I can't remember the size, but we'd just attach it to the car and just creep over there and
it wasn't a far move. It's kind of like when we did Kansas City.
Yeah.
I mean, you were 500 yards away or whatever.
Yeah,
Glenstone or Fremont.
A bunch of people would carry the stuff over.
Yeah.
And
when the new store, is that when like you got Taylor, or did Taylor and Fender, were they already with you before you moved?
No, I think we got it there, and I probably picked it up at the NAMM show. I honestly do not remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Because
wasn't super consequential at the time, probably.
It really wasn't. It's just another line. And the Taylor rep and I, it was the guy that used to be one of the owners of the Caves in L.A. And I cannot remember his name, but he and I just never hit it off. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like he didn't really want to talk to me. Mm-hmm. And but I kept bugging him, you know, and I do remember that. And then when we sat down, he said, I'll make your order. I said, okay, make it. Tell me what you think ought to have.
Right.
And I said, okay, and left. And that was the end of that. And what really wasn't very ceremonious.
Yeah.
And what was his name?
Was it Jeff Simpson?
Jeff Simpson.
That was the rep when I came here. I hated Jeff.
Yeah, Jeff's kind of dick.
Yeah, we didn't get along very well either.
Yeah. Well, he just never got over the McCabe days.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with McCabe's?
Uh-uh.
It was like a string shop in Westwood, I think it was.
Okay.
And
like violin string shop?
No, like...
like guitar shop.
Yeah, like a guitar. Kind of like acoustic shop.
Oh, gotcha.
But not country. It was more bluegrass.
Gotcha.
Well, they're more bluegrass.
They're more bluegrass, yeah.
But also in Irish music, it's kind of really...
Very specialized.
But they used to bring in bands all the time, so you go to McCabe's and hear anybody you wanted to, and it's very small and intimate.
Yeah.
And I think that's when Jeff was involved in it.
Gotcha. Shopping Center was completed, what, 97? Mm-hmm. You moved in 97, 98?
January of 97.
97, okay. So I remember working for Con Selmer in 2001 and hearing from... Never actually, the guys from Glenn's, which is funny, because we'll get to that here in just a second, but I remember talking to the folks at Hoover and to the folks at Beckerdyke about Springfield Music. And I didn't bring it up. They were just bringing up the store, because you guys had just moved into this new store. And
right.
I think they were asking me if you know, if I was going to
open
up Springfield Music. I'm like, well, they haven't reached out, and... I mean, I already have, like, basically three dealers all within the Springfield market. Like, that's... I don't really need a fourth, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, what's the store? Like, what is the store? I've never heard of it. And they were like, oh, it's a really pretty store. Like, that was... And I could tell from the sound of their voice, like, there was some kind of, like, reverence for it. And
really?
A little bit... Yeah. And a little bit of, like, they were all very concerned about what was coming next. Because I think before... In the band world, they were just like, yeah, it's just...
Yeah,
it wasn't much of anything. And then... but when the new store was built, it was really pretty. I remember they were all like, what's happening next? And, of course, then the next thing that happens is you buying Glenn's.
Yeah.
And that was...
Glenn was always on the ropes. Always.
Yes. So the entire time Glenn's was a UMI dealer, when I worked for UMI, they were always on credit hold.
Yeah.
And then I remember one day... who was his son that was running it?
Greg.
He called me up and he's like, hey, I need to know what our total is for us to pay everything off in full. And I was like,
are you kidding?
More than you've got. And he was like, I was like, well, why? What's happening? He's like, I can't really talk about it, but I just need to get our total. And I was so young. I was 26 or 27. I had no idea that he was selling the store. I thought, did they come into some money? Like, I couldn't figure out what it was. And then the next thing I get is a phone call from you saying, hey, I bought Glenn's Music, so I guess I'm a dealer now.
That was the assumption, but, you know, everybody assumed that, but it wasn't necessarily true.
Yeah.
All the time. But, yeah, because I don't think you committed.
No, we actually didn't hit it off very well, because I had told you that I was like, well, it doesn't really work that way, and I was trying to explain the way all the dealership agreements work.
Well,
that
now, like, you know, I wasn't being
individual.
I was just being my normal self. So.
Well, I remember you were so angry, and I remember thinking, like, I remember telling you, like, look, like, you have to fill out, like, the dealer agreement. I have to come, like, look at your store. And you're like, well, when can you get up here then? And I was like, I don't know, man, like, it's a few hours away. Like, I could... Maybe next week, and you're like, get up here next week. I was like, geez, all right.
Did I say that?
Yeah. Okay. You were real pushy about it. And I remember the whole drive up to Springfield, because I was living in Tulsa at the time, thinking, I don't really want to work with this guy, you know? And then, which is hysterical now. But then when I walked into the store, we were thinking, like, oh, my gosh. Like, out of my entire territory, it was the best-looking store.
Maybe I was feeling really cocky just because of what
I think you were feeling really frustrated, because I think all, you know, for most of your career at that point, like, you're asking for lines, people telling you no,
never,
and you're just like, what do I have to do? And I get it. Like, being on the other side of it, it can be really frustrating. You know, we deal with that even now. There's some brands that were like, we should have this brand. It's ridiculous that we don't. But the store was so lovely, like, you know, that, like, it just, to me, it was like, well, this is the place I have to be. And, of course, the plan back then was...
I'm glad you thought that.
Yeah. Well, the plan originally was you were thinking about keeping both places open, Glenn's and Springfield Music. Right. They were kind of running separately, but then that lasted. It felt like a couple of months.
It didn't even last. Well, we had it going out of business.
So yeah.
I spent 2 months over there just selling off everything I could just to recover cash, and which worked out okay. And then they were coming to the end of their lease, and I thought, you know, I'm not going to renew this.
Yeah. So you got the Lusaders and you got Paul in that deal primarily, and the plan was for all those folks to stay and work, and then, you know, Greg was going to be on the road and all this stuff, but then they kind of jumped ship pretty quick.
He'd come in at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I'm like, Greg, what are you doing?
Right.
He's like, well, you know, I had things to do, and I'm like, dude, I said, you're working for me now. I said, you can't do that.
Yeah.
And he just never quit. And finally one day he said, I'm leaving. I went, great. You're out of here. And his brother was even worse, his brother. But his brother was more upfront than Greg.
Yeah.
Because his brother said, no, I'm going to go be a pilot.
Yeah, and he did.
And he said, go for it, man. Patrick Henry. That's what you've been working on. You got to do that.
Yeah.
And he's a great repairman, but Paul was just as good.
Yeah, yeah.
And Paul was like, you know Paul. I mean, he's always a little skeptical.
Right.
And so he's like, you know, are you serious? Are you really going to be good? You know,
right.
Are we going to do this here? And I said, yeah. I said, I'm planning on some big things. I just don't know what they are yet. Guarantee you, we're going to be fine.
Well, when the Lusaders left,
he was on the road.
Yeah, they basically left Paul holding the bag because he had to do then the road and repair.
And that lasted not very long.
Yeah, he did that for 6 months or something like that.
Yeah, and he came in and he said, I can't do this anymore. He said, you're going to have to find somebody or else.
Yeah.
You know, he kind of laid down the gauntlet and... Well,
yeah. and our story started where I was trying to help you guys find someone. Right. The first only person I could think of was CJ Finnegan from Ernie Williamson. You know, I knew he probably wasn't a great fit, but he was like, he was the only band guy I knew in this territory. Yeah. Like, there was no one from Hoover that would come, and Beckard, I didn't have anybody. Like, and then you had me interview with, was it D. Robinson that I interviewed with next?
Yes.
Yeah, and that was like over an hour. And I remember sitting in his office, and at the end of it, I think you were hoping that was going to help create a counter. And at the end of it, D was like, well, how much is he wanting? And you told him, and D was like, well, I think he'd be worth it. You can afford it, so I think you should do it. I remember thinking, like, I think I just got this job. And I remember calling Belinda on the way home, because she originally did not want to move up here. Right. But when I told her, it was like, I got everything I asked for. Like, I got the salary I wanted. He's going to pay the closing costs and move us. Like, I got everything I wanted. And, like, that gave her a lot of confidence that, like...
Well, and then the one big misstep in my mind was when you were staying with us.
Yeah.
In her house. And you couldn't get back in. And I seriously, I probably never told you this, but I thought, it's over. I would be so pissed off about that.
What's funny is our recollection of that.
I said, just leave the door open.
Yeah.
I walk in, no problem. She goes, no. And I said, yes. And son of a bitch, she didn't lock the door.
That's right. Like, our recollection of that was another visit where Belinda was with me and we were looking
for homes
again. We had Caleb. And Caleb threw up all over, he'd just been fed, and he threw up all over your ottoman. And Nancy, you had a couch and an ottoman right off the kitchen. It wasn't the one in the living room,
but you had one in the
eating kitchen.
Yeah.
It was red, yeah. And Nancy's like, oh my gosh, I haven't had a chance to scotch guard that yet. And I remember Belinda just being like petrified that our kid just threw up all over this beautiful ottoman. I mean, that one ottoman was probably worth more than all of the furniture we owned at the time.
I do not remember that.
Isn't it funny? It's all the stuff that...
I remember that.
But man, it's just
good.
Funny how all those little pieces fall into place. Yeah. Yeah. Fall into place. And, you know, any of these little signs could have gone a different direction.
Yeah. Yeah,
you
know, all were tenuous.
Yeah. And I remember I shared at Breakfast Clubs, you know, when you were finishing the home at Millwood, and I was up in town for something. I was doing a master order with Paul, doing accessory master order. And I'd asked where you were, and he was like, oh, he's out. He's trying to finish up his home that he's building. And so I called you on the phone. I remember standing there right in the office at Springfield Music, Susan Wheeler sitting behind the desk, and I'm standing up, like, talking. And I was asking how the job search was going, and that's when you said, like, I really want you to come do it.
Oh,
and
okay.
I remember, and this would have been like April of 2001.
Yeah,
and I wasn't ready at the time, but I was like, well, you know, I don't know, whatever, and like didn't think much of it. And then when Selmer bought us, and it became clear things were going to happen, and then like 9/11 happened, Caleb was born. There was just a bunch of stuff that happened that time of 2001. And I thought, you know, it's time to shift. And I remember I was thinking about you, Sade Music, and Flint Hills Music were the three that I was, and the guys at Flint Hills were friends, which is why I ultimately decided against pursuing that, because it was, I just thought it'd be too close. And Sade, I'd competed against for a long time. It'd be like going to work for Palin, you know. It's like, yeah, I just don't know if I can do that. And
the whole gig, though, literally from day one, I always saw you as the person that was going to buy it.
Yeah.
And you were, and I had no idea how it was going to work out, but I just always thought, you know.
Yeah, you said it from day
you're
one.
You're qualified. You know the business, you, at least the core business, which is band orchestra, and you could do anything else.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just knew it from day one. And not that I had any special information, I just felt that way.
So. Well, it's just amazing that.
And what's great is it worked out.
It did, yeah. What I love, too, is like, cause from the very beginning, you're like, you said, I need someone to go on the road, because Paul won't quit. We can't have that. But then I want someone basically can run the business for me and eventually buy it. And at that time, you know, when I came on, I was totally up for doing the road thing temporarily. I didn't want to do it full time. I was really transparent about that. I was totally good with running the business. I wanted to do that. I wasn't sure I wanted to buy it.
Yeah. Well, that's a pretty big leap.
I had a lot of fear about it and stuff like that. Of course, at that point, too, we had student loans out the wazoo. We had consumer debt out the wazoo. It seemed like it would never be able to happen. But it just the fear of, like, gosh, what if I buy it and it doesn't work? Like, I don't know.
Just think of all the
that was so long ago. Yeah.
You've done. I mean,
well, we've done it together. I mean, this
well,
is...
Well, I'm just talking about as far as your personal life. I mean, you know, you went through a series of moves.
Oh, yeah.
You got a really nice home there.
Yeah, yeah.
Melinda had a great job.
Yeah.
You know, she's kind of
got out of
gone
debt.
Through the ranks. And
kids. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, there's just been all kinds of stuff.
I mean, honestly, personal life and stuff, and don't take this the wrong way, you're way more successful than we are. So, you know, we never had kids. We, you know,
well, that was,
we just had stuff.
No, that was, ours wasn't necessarily chosen. It's just how it ended up, you know.
Well, that's
and,
same with us. We just ended up with
not having kids.
We just weren't very fertile.
Yeah.
That's all there
is. Yeah.
You know?
I think Belinda was more fertile than, yeah. than we
well, but just
say needed.
Though, I mean, you've got two kids that you can bring in the business.
Yeah, the oldest is totally up for that. You know, he's doing the marching band at Missouri State with the idea of being able to kind of network and stuff. Yeah. And then a buddy of mine who owns Zestwitz Music in Pennsylvania, he's got his Harvard MBA and was a consultant for Deloitte & Touche. Like, this guy's smartest guy I know in our industry. He's agreed that when Caleb graduates, that he can come intern with him. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and I've always told Caleb, if he wants to do something else, he can do something else. He doesn't have to come do this. But if he does, he can go intern over there and then come tell us what all the smart people do. And
yeah. Folks do know what they're doing.
Yeah. The guy who played clarinet in middle school but got into this school music business because he realized it was, or felt like it was such a great business model. I mean, that's the whole reason why he bought Zestwitz and
so he's
got into it. It's just the rental model, you know, being so good. The rental,
you know,
service
I never
model.
Dealt that the rental business was all that good, mainly because of all the investment, and I've always kind of been the other way of, you know, I'd rather put in what I can afford, you know, sell it, turn it over, expand it, sell it, turn it over, expand it. But that's kind of the rental business, too.
It is. Same thing. What's amazing is, you know, you're sharing before how, like, when Bill had it, he would do roughly 300 rentals a year. We've got 5,000 rentals out. We would have had more if this year would have been a good year, but being the pandemic year, you know, we did a fraction of what we normally do. But, man, to be at 5,000 rentals is just That's a crazy number to me.
Over 20 years.
Yeah. That's a crazy number.
Well, we were probably at about... No, we were probably at about 600, I think, whenever you came on.
Yeah.
And, so that's a lot. That's a big number. That's 2,400 rentals. That's a lot.
Another favorite story of mine, and I don't know if you remember this, but I'll never forget it, and I've told the story 100 times, and every time the hair in the back of my neck stands up. But one day, this is back when you still had an office at the store.
I'm thinking I know the story.
Yeah, it's how we got Ernie Williams some music. And you called me into the office. At that time, my office was where the tailor room is now,
right,
in the store.
Yeah.
And it was an afternoon, and late in the afternoon, and so we sit and talk, and you were saying how, like, we're doing a lot of business down in the Joplin area, which we were. We had Webb City and Carl Junction and Carthage, all these schools. And you're like, you know, we should have a store there. I remember telling you, like, well, there's a handful of stores.
Can't believe us.
That was your idea. But I was like, the one to get is Ernie Williams Music, just because it's a diamond in the rough, but, like, it's been there forever. Like, everyone has gone there. Their grandparents have gone there.
Everybody I've ever talked to. I've run into people, as an aside,
yeah.
I was out in Palm Springs in our RV, and a guy pulled up next to me, and we got in. You know, a couple hours later after it's set up, we got to talking, just introduced each other. And he said, where are you from? I said, Springfield. He said, oh. He said, yeah, I lived in Joplin for years. I said, you're kidding. He said, no, I was in the car business. And I mentioned my uncle. He goes, hey, I knew all your uncles. And I'm like, yeah, really? He said, what do you do? And I said, I own Springfield Music. And then we have Ernie Williams Music. Ernie Williams Music. He said, damn, I rent out all my instruments. My kids have to start. I'm like, you can't make this shit.
No, you can't. You can't.
It just appears.
Yeah. You know? Well, it was a late afternoon, and you were saying, we need it. So I was telling you about the shop, and you said, all right, tomorrow I'll call them and see if they... Or you asked me if I thought they'd be interested in selling, and
right.
I said, probably, because Ernie's daughter Lois runs it now, and she's well into her 70s. And you said, we'll call them in the morning. And so that afternoon, I was driving home, and my phone rings, and it was CJ, who was the manager of that store.
Yeah, because you hadn't even called him yet.
Yeah, I hadn't even called him, and he was like, would you guys be interested? And it turns out that Palin was also trying to buy a store there at the time, which we didn't know. You and I had no idea. But they had come in and talked to CJ. So CJ called us.
That's funny.
And we ended up buying the store from Lois.
I remember you telling me that.
And I remember sitting in her dining room, me, you, and her, and her longtime boyfriend, whose name I forgot, and negotiating the purchase of
Ernie's. She wanted $25,000 more, and I remember that, and I said, yeah, I'll
get it. Yeah, I think we ended up paying
$325,000.
Yeah.
Because I was offering her $300,000. She said, well, I'd really like more.
Yeah.
I said, well, how much? She said, $325,000. And Lois, you know, I mean, I'm not going to take advantage of that. She said, sure, Lois, I'll give you whatever you want. She could have said $380,000. I would have said, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
And that's just made all the difference down in that market, too. Because, I mean, and of course, then we were in that original store for a little bit. Well, that wasn't the original store. That was actually the second store. Because his original store was over on Joplin Street.
Right.
But we were there for a bit, and then they started tearing up downtown. And so then you had been looking for new spaces.
Yeah, and that got all.
And I remember you found that building that used to be a gas station and then had been expanded. And at the last thing it was, where we bought it, was a mattress building.
Right.
And I remember you telling me, like, you'd seen it, you wanted me to go with you to look at it. You're like, no, it's going to take a little bit of creativity and vision to see.
It's really a piece of junk.
I remember standing inside of it, and you could look outside. Yeah. You know, you could see the outside from inside the building through the roof.
Yeah, the roof was bad.
Because it'd been added on to, like, multiple times.
The thing that always bothered me was it was 27 feet deep.
Yeah, it was like a rail car or something.
Yeah.
And super shallow
and, what's interesting
and crazy
is
wide.
That we left 1,000 square feet for lease space.
Yeah.
And we built it.
That's true.
And Greg was going to put a piano store in there.
1,000 square foot piano store.
Yeah. Right. And thank God he didn't do it, because I think we figured out we needed that space.
Like right away.
A month.
Yeah.
You know?
We needed it for a stock room, because we didn't build a stock. Our stock room was smaller than this office.
What was the...
What became,
it was on the very end.
It became the sheet music room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where the door was.
Originally, that was the stock room. It was really, really tiny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. God, I forgot about that.
And then the other part of that deal that's so funny, too, is, of course, with the whole us running Ernie's, there's all kinds of stories about the technology challenges of figuring out the staffing challenges.
Just printing alone.
Printing is a... thing.
Story
and then it was truly a cast of characters of who worked at Ernie Williamson at the time we bought it.
The sheet music.
Yeah, Rebecca Luber, CJ, Ray, I forgot, Ray Nimmo, Repair Tech.
Oh, yeah.
Shasta, who was doing the office stuff. Yeah. And then Kylie Tripoli, who's now, I forgot Kylie's new name, but she's an orchestra teacher now in Joplin. But just a whole, it was almost like a musical, how all these people with their strong personalities.
Yeah, they were all kind of drama. Especially Rebecca.
Yeah. They kind of all started kind of either leaving or getting left.
Couldn't handle the structure.
And then, but one of my other favorite stories is, you know, off and on over the years, you had talked about buying the houses behind us and building a shopping center and, you know, but just kind of off and on talking about it. And then one day I get the call that you've bought the houses behind the shopping center. I was like, oh, you're going to buy them? And like, no, I've already bought them. I was like, oh, so this is happening. Like, we're actually doing this.
And these people, I mean, they asked $120,000 each one of them.
Right.
All got together.
For houses that were worth like 40 or 50 grand.
And so, you know, and I met them at their house and I said, okay. You know, I've always found that that's a path of least resistance.
Right.
You know, you give them what they want. And I said, okay, I'll do it. And the lady that I was really friends with that owned the middle house, she said, so did I? Did I go too low? And I went, no, you did not go too low.
Yeah.
I said, I'm stretching here.
Yeah.
But I was glad to get it done. But,
they knew they had the critical pieces
because
you couldn't go out into the road, of course.
Yeah.
You needed to be able to go back.
I had to go back.
Yeah.
And then I had to buy another one.
Yeah.
That was $50,000.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and then I remember, you know, we are on the hook to do that. We're going to build this shopping center. And originally you wanted you and I to kind of just design the inside of it.
Bad idea.
And I kept arguing that it was a really bad idea and you weren't for it. But then I ran into Bruce. The bicyclist.
Yeah.
And
that was a good move, by the way.
Yeah, it was. And I met him through the chamber was doing this thing called Connect for Lunch, and so we met at Pasta Express over on they used to have a location over on Republic Road, West Republic Road, and we were sitting one time, and his specialty was lighting, and so we started talking about lighting. I was telling him about the space that we're doing, and you know, like he immediately just like grabbed a napkin and started sketching something out, and I was like, wow, this is on the napkin and it's better than. I'd been working on it for like a week trying to come up with something, and I wasn't coming with anything. And so I remember because he was a cyclist and you were a cyclist, I got you guys together to talk about cycling.
Yeah.
And then that led to one. Yeah. And the next thing, then he brought Kathy Bruton on board as the interior designer. And then, like, that's how the store in Joplin really came to be, was that team of folks.
And the other part of that was I gave him a budget. I can't remember what I said, but I said, I really almost spent about $8,000 on this. I said, it's all I can afford. And I think I ended up spending like $15,000, and the last bill was $10,000. And he sent me an email and said, you know, you can decide if you want to pay this or not. Because we put in the time and we really did our best.
I remember that, yeah.
And I just told him, I said, you know, you did a good job, and I'm not going to screw you out of that. So I paid him.
That store is just...
And, you know, it's like, that's money you're not going to... You don't miss it after a while.
Well, and it... paid off big time.
Yeah.
Because that store has just become...
Just wonderful.
Yeah. Up until that point, it was kind of like Kansas City is right now. Like, it was just nice little store, you know. Yeah. Do $1,200 bucks a day. Good day was $2,000.
Mm-hmm.
Man, we moved in there and almost... It felt like almost overnight the sales doubled. And then it's just continued to grow and grow and grow.
Yeah.
And it's become a real fixture in that market.
Yeah.
And was a tremendous, tremendous
people,
investment.
Oh,
yeah.
People...
We were kind of rotating through folks.
But you always upgraded.
Yeah.
You always upgraded. So that was the interesting part. And, I mean, Jared's wonderful.
Oh,
so
man.
He's still there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Jared's doing a great job. He's
But, you know, he was always very nice and very attentive when I came in. You know, because he didn't know me the first time. I just walked in one day and he said, can I help you? And I went, yeah, Lee Coates. He went, oh, yeah, how you doing? Jared. I went, yeah, great. You know, let me look around. And I just took off.
Jared is, he's an Eli find. And Eli knew him.
Oh, really?
And, you know, Eli was another one of those, like, when Eli became the store manager, that store just, like, the culture there was bad, like...
Yeah, it changed.
It just, and Eli was a big part of that transformation. And I remember when he needed to hire a salesperson. He knew of Jared because Jared had a recording studio in town. And so he brought Jared in for me to interview, and I remember not thinking much of Jared. I remember thinking
he didn't strike you.
No, and I got the impression that Jared thought he was much too cool for this job, you know. Mm-hmm. And but Jared got into it and started doing really well, and like kind of became a go-to guy there, like pretty quickly. It was a good salesperson, and then just kind of a go-to. And then when Jared and I went to Summer NAMM together a couple of years ago, we really got to know each other. Then and I started listening to kind of what he thought the vision for the store could be, and I remember that just sound like, wow, that sounds really good. Like, this guy really sounds invested. And at the same time, Eli was needing a change, and kind of worked out really well. And so those guys have both been good for it, but like, you know, one guy kind of got it up to there, and then sort of crested right in time for the next guy to take it and let go. And
you know, yeah,
there was, you know, it was sometime after we bought Joplin, but before we built the new shopping center, we had taken over the road operations for Becherdyke. Do you remember when that was?
That was before.
Yeah, it was definitely before. 2007?
Well, it was not long after you were there, so 2004, somewhere.
Somewhere right around there.
Because I remember driving up, you and I driving up there, and,
yeah,
and I was like, you know, how did you do this? I just love inventory.
Like, yeah, we got a good deal on that one.
Yeah. And
we didn't manage it particularly well, so no, we ended up not keeping the accounts. But we still came out well on
it. Yeah, the inventory was.
We got rentals and we got inventory, and then I think after that was Kansas City. I don't think we had any other things we purchased.
That was your deal, yeah.
Yeah.
I just showed up one day in my little motorhome and came in and said, okay, what are we doing?
Yeah, I remember telling you when you and I had actually gone to meet with those guys. And the whole reason we went to Kansas City was that was Tim from Hoshino. Tim, yeah. I didn't sleep very well last night, so I can't remember names. But anyways, I had always thought the next door was in Tulsa. Because that's where I'm from, and Springfield, Joplin, Tulsa, like, very logical. But Tim sort of told me about Johnson County, Kansas, and how it's the third wealthiest county in the U.S. And so, and there's no music stores like us up there. Boy, he just got me, like, he just, like, rung me in, you know? And I was like, oh, man, that's going to be our biggest store up there eventually. And that deal worked out pretty well. I mean, we met with Pat and John and... Nothing. Originally, they wanted like $600,000 for their music store. I think we ended up paying like $92,000, I think. Yeah. And, yeah, it is. I remember when I told them that we weren't very interested in, you know, we're $75,000-$80,000 all we think it's worth. I remember for sure thinking that was a no. That was my way of brushing them off. And he said, you know what, I think we'll take it. I remember calling you going, I wasn't sure how you were going to feel about it. I remember calling you to tell you that, well, we just agreed to buy the store up there. And because we hadn't, like, totally decided for sure we were doing it. We just looked. But I felt like we were obligated. But that worked out. You know, it's never been, a big money maker. But in terms of return on investment, that one was a good one. Yeah. I mean, like, we didn't put hardly anything into it. Yeah. And then it's always thrown off a little bit of profit after that. And now it's on a nice little growth right now.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's because you made it that way.
Yeah. It's new store.
Nice location.
Yeah. Looks better good. Location. Looks a lot nicer.
I've only seen pictures, but it looks great.
Doesn't flood.
Yeah. doesn't have a very weird landlord.
Yeah, we got a good landlord. So we officially closed on that October 2012. And then in January, just a couple months later, Larry Barnes reached out to me to see if we'd be interested in Fazio's. And I'll never forget that.
Oh, was that Fazio's?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I was just heading out of town, and I was going up to Kansas City. I was making the delivery to Kansas City, and Larry called me. And so I pulled over, and I was in a Jimmy John's parking lot here in town, and to talk to Larry. And he was asking he's like, well, since you guys are in this growth mode, I remember laughing out loud saying, we buy two stores in 15 years. I don't know if that's a growth mode, you know. And I was like, but I remember it being Mike Fazio, like, and Fazio's, like, I was like,
well, I remember that too.
Out of respect, I want to go, I'll at least go talk to him. Yeah. And so I remember talking to Mike on the phone that day and telling Mike, like, I'm not sure really in a position to do anything, but, like, I'd be happy to talk to you about it. And I mentioned that to you, and you're like, well, I want to go. And so we ended up driving up there together, not thinking we were going to do anything. And then Mike had like the retirement letters were scheduled to go out that Monday. We were there on a Friday.
Yeah, that was scary.
Yeah.
That was a little scary.
And we got there and we saw the store, we saw the inventory, we met the people that worked in the store, and we both just kind of were like, this needs to not go away, and kind of hammered out an agreement with Mike that day. And I remember calling Ryan Jones on the way back. That was Friday night at 7-8 o'clock at night.
$800,000.
Calling our banker saying we need almost $1 million to buy the store in St. Louis. Him saying okay, and us calling Mike that night. Him getting the printer to not mail out all the retirement letters had been printed already, but hadn't gotten mailed. So him stopping that and like
thing. It was one of these companies that.
That specializes in going out of business sales.
Yeah, exactly.
But I remember they had already printed all the letters, but hadn't yet mailed them.
I bet they were sad.
They probably were, because that was going to be a big blowout. Yeah. Because you guys closed and called me, and we started doing the inventory count right then.
Yeah.
He and I had gone to lunch a few times. We still kind of stay in touch.
It's good to stay in touch.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't.
He's very grateful to us for buying it and keeping it going. And making it,
his name's on it.
A going concern. Like, you know, he has a lot of gratitude for that. He didn't want to see it go, but he also didn't want to see it run into the ground. Mm-hmm. And he'd rather see it go than run into the ground. And he had confidence that we would run it right.
And we did.
We've changed it, but it's not what it was, but it's good. Mm-hmm. But it's just different.
It's what it needs to be.
Yeah, and he's okay with that. You know, he's
good.
He's fine with that.
Good.
And then... yeah, and then of course here we are, the pandemic year, 2020.
Like,
who would have thought that this would be the year that this would finally
certain
happen?
Certain things happen that make it work.
Yeah.
And just the cash. It's like the cash infusion.
Yeah. The PPP was certainly a critical part of it, but then the SBA loan was a big part of that. And of course, in spite of all that, we've also had a good year just because the guitar business, if you're heavy a guitar dealer this year, you're probably doing okay. It's all those things combined to make it where it's like, let's do it. You know,
It's been a big surprise to me. I never would have thought it, and I'm glad it worked out.
Yeah,
because I think first of all, I'm too old. I needed to go, and you needed to have it, and that's all I wanted.
I needed to have it before I was too old.
Yeah.
That was the thing that was starting to get to me. I was like, Jesus, if I get in my 50s, I don't want to. I just turned 46.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm not too old now, but like if this got kept getting pushed on and pushed on, like if I'm 50 and then I'm in my 60s by the time it's paid off, like.
But it's good that it happened.
Yeah, I think it really was.
And the nice thing is, what I liked was, everybody kept their job. And it's just moving on like normal.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah,
wonderful. I couldn't be happier with that.
Me too. You know, it's funny because things feel different. Even though, like, really, my day-to-day is no different. I don't manage anything different because you've always allowed me to run it.
Calling.
Well, it's not so much that, but it's the I don't know. It's just different when you own it.
Yeah,
you know, it's just
yours.
Different. You know, and
it'll feel totally different when it's paid off and it's yours.
I bet.
Which I suspect you'll probably get there pretty quick.
Yeah, hopefully before the 10 years that it's predicted would be great.
Well, I'm thinking 5.
Yeah,
you know, my best hope is 5, and there's enough cash, and you can buy me out of my spaces.
Well,
you're off and running.
I think if things go the way we hope, like we know we'll at the very least be in a position to be able to buy the spaces in 5 years, which would be a good thing for us to do. Let's tell Belinda, I was like, can you imagine, like, once the business is paid off, and then we buy the two commercial properties, and those are paid off, for two poor kids from Oklahoma, I mean, I'm from Texas, but we met in Oklahoma, and, like, her parents didn't want her to marry me, because they thought that I would never be anything, and, like,
you know? I mean, our situation was my family had no money, and Nancy's mother, she always put money away, and she was a real sweetheart. I really liked her. And but when she passed away, we all inherited $30,000. And I've never had $30,000 in my entire life. I was like, jeez, what am I going to do with this?
Right.
And I felt this heavy responsibility to not lose it, you know.
Yeah.
And that was the most important thing to me, was just don't lose it, you know. Yeah. Invest it, but don't lose it. And so that's when we ended up buying Earth Wonder, and somehow it all worked out.
That's great. Now, didn't you guys own a health food store in Oklahoma City?
No, we looked at a health food store in Oklahoma City.
Oh, okay.
And there's one that I used to go hang, or I didn't hang out there, but I went there a couple of times when I went to school there.
Yeah.
And the same guy that I knew there still was there.
Yeah.
When she and I went and looked at it. And we decided not to do that. And we ended up coming to Springfield because we knew the people that owned it here.
So you bought Earth Wonder here, and then you sold it, and then ended up getting it back again.
Yeah, that was a big hit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what provided the cash
for
the shopping center and move and all that. That was a turning point.
Yeah.
You know, one of those critical mass things.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's been a bunch of those over the years.
Yeah, there
you know, I mean, and there's been things that haven't worked out, but man, there's been a lot, feels like there's been a lot more that has worked out than hasn't, especially the big risky ones.
Yeah, the things that didn't work out didn't kill you.
But I'm glad this worked out for us.
And for you, this is, to me, the best thing that could ever happen.
Yeah.
I mean, I am so glad that something I said many years ago actually came to fruition. You know, I really am, because it's nice to have that stuff work out.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's good for you.
It worked out great for both of us.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I was really good for you for the 20 years that I worked for you, and you were great for me.
I mean, you gave me many years of semi-retirement that
I
probably wouldn't have gotten
otherwise.
I probably would have failed.
I don't think you would have done that. I think you would have been successful, but I think you would have been spending a lot more time at work than what you've been able to do, and you've been able to enjoy, you know, a lot of your life more than you would have otherwise.
Yeah,
and for me, same boat. Like, I was at a spot, needed a chance to show what I could do. You know, I always felt like I could be successful, but working for Consumer, like, there was too much freedom there, and I didn't know enough about what I was doing to really be successful. And so to be able to come here, like, I remember, you know, Roy had Guitar Source up in Kansas City, and Roy DeWitt, and Roy told me once that he was like, well, you basically, like, you know, walked into that thing, and he said something about, like, how, I think he was trying to say that I started on second base, or that I had, like, a silver spoon in my mouth, but he said that I walked in with a silver spoon in my mouth, but, like, he's not entirely wrong. Like, you know, walking into Springfield Music, where I came into it at, you know, the new shopping center, the new building, having Paul, and, like,
visually it was good.
Yeah, there was a lot of, like, really good pieces there, and a lot of stores don't have that. They have
just floating,
and they're barely making a buy. We had the ability to, like, make the investment and to bring in the key pieces, and there's really never been anything that we've set our mind to do or that we wanted to do that we haven't been able to accomplish.
Actually, the thing that always impressed me was, and you've always said, I mean, just the books that are right there, I mean, you just absorb all that stuff. From my standpoint, I always hated that. I just didn't like the commitment it took to change my behavior in any appreciable way, or to the team building concept. I mean, I'm kind of a team builder, but not really.
Yeah. You know?
I'm more of just a seat in the pants kind of person.
Right.
But you're more of a team builder. You actually do things with a purpose.
Yeah.
That's probably what's going to be your strong suit.
Probably is. Yeah. But that all started not necessarily because that's an innate skill I have. That all started because when I came here, I felt like I had just bullshitted you into how great I was and everything. Actually, I had no idea about any of it. I didn't know
how much debt I was holding. Yeah.
I remember you used to tell me about, you know, how important cash flow was, and me being like, cash flow, yes, lifeblood of any business. And then immediately going to the library to get a book because I had no idea what cash flow meant. Like, I didn't understand any of that. And so I remember, and I didn't really know, like, professional sales. I just, everything had always been just off of my personality, or the fact that I could play the trumpet. Like, that was really the only things that had
your calling card.
And so I started having to do all this, and then the team stuff had happened because you had, you know, you wanted these things to happen, And I didn't quite know how to do it, so I had to start pulling in the other people that worked here.
Nice that you actually listened.
Yeah, to like, hey, well, you know, Lee wants all this to happen, and so I need your help because I don't know what to do. And so that's how all the teamwork started. Yeah. So in a way, it started because of what you were forcing.
Forced it upon you.
Because I wasn't an avid business book reader by that point. I just, but then I got you get in the habit, you know, and you get in the habit of doing it and reading it, and then you learning stuff about it, and mm-hmm. it becomes a hobby mm-hmm. almost. And then, I read less now than I used to. I used to read constantly, and then you find yourself like there's in that edutainment mode of like wanting to change something because you read something, and now
it's
slowed down.
You need to know.
Yeah.
And you just practice it.
Yeah.
Every day, so.
Yeah. So. Yeah. You get the teamwork thing figured out. That's the big.
Yeah.
Boy, that one's the big one. You know, especially with a team our size, there's a lot of undertapped resources here, you know. It's all worked out. I'm sure it will continue to work out.
Well, as long as everybody's best interests are served.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it doesn't have, you know, and nobody's greedy.
Right.
You know, that's the whole point about negotiation is everybody wins, but nobody's greedy.
Right.
So that's how it works.
Yeah, everybody can win, and you don't have to have anyone lose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you just have to have your expectations in order.
Yeah.
So.
And sometimes you have to have your expectations changed.
Yeah, or changed, yeah.
You know,
everybody has.
You kind of go on one idea, then sometimes it's like, oh, well, that's not
going
to work out quite the way I thought, but it's okay. Like, it's still worth pursuing and doing and going forward.
It's been fun. I will say this. I mean, the last 20 years have been, you know, I mean, we've had our moments, but on the other hand, we've always put them aside.
Yeah.
And moved on.
We've had way more good moments than bad moments. Yeah. And there's just been a lot of growing pains for both of us. But, you know, for both of us, we've kind of hung in there. You know, there's been a lot of people sitting in my seat over the years to try to work with you on stuff that couldn't hang in there. And there's times where I'd understand it. There'd be times where I'm like, this guy is driving me nuts. Like, and, but all in all, man, it's been really, really good.
I was actually really happy that you came on.
Well, that's a wrap for this episode. If you'd like help with your business, check out musicretailconsulting.com for articles, resources, and coaching and consulting services. Also, you can subscribe to this podcast so you're aware of future updates and rate and review while you're at it. Thanks for listening.